Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Well, I teach our counselors two words, frequency and intensity.
Michelle Niedert on Focus on the Family Minute.
So those are the things we want to look at any age. We love that kids are saying, I'm scared, because they're developing emotional vocabulary, which we want. And you're right. Previously, generations didn't want emotions to be on the bus. Even psychology tended to lean towards logic. Even Christian work did. And then we moved into this area where we are now, where emotions are almost running our bus, right? But what we really want to do is like empower kids to let God and them drive the bus, but have emotions on the bus. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really important that we do that. And so we want to help kids gain perspective, for sure. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how scared are you is a great question for a parent to ask. Yeah.
More from Michelle at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
At Good Neighbors Electric, they're more than just electricians. They're your neighbors. Whether it's a small repair or a big project, from home inspections and panel upgrades to full electrical rebuilds, their licensed pros show up on time and do the job right. Good Neighbors Electric, locally owned, family operated, and proud to serve our community with honesty, skill, and a smile. Good Neighbors Electric. Call 805-610-5530 or visit goodneighborselectric.com.
We see you sitting there, daydreaming about a place where infinite horizons mean more freedom. Well, at Chumash Casino Resort, we're giving away over $500,000 in cash and prizes. Everything you need to find yourself elsewhere. Drawing Sundays in December. Need more details? Visit ChumashCasino.com. And hey, welcome to freedom. Must be present to win. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Good afternoon and welcome to Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi on AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM. Phone lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. California Free Talk is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. And now, Free Talk California on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi. Today, we are going to have a fun little excursion, something a little different. I'm going to be joined later in this hour by Scott Johnson. He is actually the father of my former boss at the Washington Free Beacon, and he is based in Minneapolis. It was actually Scott who first promulgated the story of the Somali U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar marrying her brother to commit immigration fraud to bring him over to the United States. He broke that story many years ago, and now it is making headlines and gaining more mainstream traction all these years later. So I thought it might be fun to bring him on and talk about how he first came across this story as a Minnesotan and why it took so long for it to gain more traction. And yes, I acknowledge that Minnesota is not California, but it's really interesting to see how its problems are mirroring ours. And it is also interesting how much fraud is coming out and finally being condemned, even by Democrats who have helped the fraud and the corruption fester. That is not happening in California, probably because Gavin Newsom is right now seen as the Democrats' great hope for 2028. And there's just been this culture of protection over the Democratic supermajority. and one party rule in California by our media that is also very similar to the media landscape in Minnesota. But things are breaking loose there, so maybe they can break loose here. And that leads me into what we're going to cover first, which is that the California State Auditor released its annual report on fraud and mismanagement in our state. It's always bad, but this one is really bad and basically states that Gavin Newsom, after coming in when things were, you know, on the decline, but not anything like they are now, is going to leave the state in a lot of trouble, both economic trouble and infrastructure trouble. And the next governor will have a lot to sort out if the next governor is one of the main Democratic candidates. I don't think we have any hope. We're looking at Eric Swalwell. We're looking at Katie Porter. I think it's pretty clear that things will just tumble more. So anyway, there's not much room for cushion anymore after the years of Gavin Newsom, according to this report. And those are my words, not the state auditor's report, not the state auditor's words, but just let's look through and see what the state auditor did say directly. So as we all know, because our taxes are very high and spending keeps going up in the state, and yet the state itself is crumbling. So that shows you that something is going very wrong in the handling of that money. Lots of fraud and abuse and waste. And that's what the state auditor found. So this state auditor highlighted several agencies. First, we'll start with the California Department of Social Services. So the Social Services Department is obviously in charge of handling a lot of the welfare benefits. This includes food stamps, which in California is known as the CalFresh program. And what they found is that in our food stamps program, there's been significant fraudulent overpayment, as much as 2.5, and this will affect federal contributions to the food stamp program, as much as $2.5 billion to keep the program at its current levels, which we all know politicians want to do. They don't want to address the fraud and make any cuts because that would cut into whatever deal making is being made. So anyway, there is significant overpayment fraud. And that's going to hit the state budget pretty soon because of federal legislation. So this that's going to be an issue. And of course, the state legislature and our governor are not talking about any spending restricting measures. They're just trying to find creative ways of raising taxes. All right. So then we get to the Employment Development Department. I think if any of you have a small business, especially restaurants, you're probably pretty bitter about EDD. So EDD made national headlines during COVID for just handing out billions and billions of dollars to fraudsters. The department separately got a big loan from the federal government to cover costs of paying all these unemployment claims that were flooding in, many from people who were forced to quit working during COVID. Obviously, California had some of the most restrictive COVID rules, so some of this was also inflicted by the state beyond what was inflicted by the federal government generally. And so there was just a lot of money going out. There was money borrowed. So much money went out in the fraud. Under the watch of Julie Hsu, used to head that department, and then she was promoted by former President Joe Biden to lead the Labor Department. She was never confirmed because of this fraud by the Senate, but she was allowed to lead the department anyway. So anyway, that's that agency. Small businesses have been forced to hike their to pay more in payroll taxes after that whole fiasco, because under Gavin Newsom, the federal loan of unemployment benefits that was supposed to be repaid was never repaid. He was probably should have repaid it when the state had its one-time big surplus of $100 billion, which happened to be thanks to the federal government. The federal government sent a lot of national American taxpayer money into California. And of course, Gavin Newsom spent it all on random things that it's not clear what those things did. But we've been in a deficit ever since. And so Gavin Newsom was like, well, we're not going to repay this federal loan. It has to be repaid so California's business owners can pay it. So that's what's been happening with the EDD. So you'd think that, you know, with all those problems, the EDD might try to rein in its payment fraud, its fraudulent payments, improper payments. But no, according to the state auditor, EDD is a, quote, high-risk agency because it has showing that it cannot prevent fraud. It doesn't have fraud prevention protections. And there is a lot there. It's admitting a lot of people to the program that end up needing to be kicked out. Obviously, this follows all the terrible mismanagement during COVID. Now we're 5 years in, 5 years after all of that, and it still is paying out unemployment claims improperly and making fraudulent payments. On top of that, the people who do deserve or have paid into the system and are kind of right to claim some benefits, apparently they're not being treated very well by the agency. The people who are properly claiming some of what they paid into the system are, quote, having difficulty receiving timely payment and often call EDD multiple times for help with their claims. All right. Moving on. Let's go to the California Department of Finance. California Department of Finance is a very important agency to keep our state running because they are supposed to be at least decent at counting, making sure that taxpayer funds, even if they're being funneled into fraudulent programs or being wasted, at least maybe keeping track of all of that. Again, the California Department of Finance is high risk, according to our state auditor. So the Department of Finance is one of those agencies that works directly for the governor. So this is Gavin Newsom's main fiscal policy advisor. And this chief financial advisor for Governor Gavin Newsom is reporting, doing all its financial reporting late. According to the auditor, the financial statements pretty much since COVID have been issued late and later with every year, months later than they were supposed to be issued. And obviously no repercussions. These guys just work for the governor. And they say, you know, this is a problem because if you don't know where the money's going in a prompt way, how can you make sure that things are running as they should? The auditor also added that the finance department really mismanaged federal COVID-19 funds. Obviously, I mentioned just that one example of EDD failing to pay back its loan. And so now California small businesses have to pay it, even though it was not their fault that the state didn't repay that loan. And so, you know, saying that the fault of the finance department in handling this is hurting all of Californians. And it's going to remain for the foreseeable future a high-risk issue for the state. All right. So there's more there. You can check out the auditor's report. There's lots of complicated notes, but it's not surprising to me. As a reporter, I had to use the state. It's called the fiscal system, and it was I forget how much of our money was spent in creating this website that was supposed to give all this transparency into how our money was being spent. I spent a lot of time, it's this portal, and I spent a lot of time there when I was trying to figure out where high-speed rail money was going. Pretty much any money. And for one thing, that's missing a lot. So a lot of the stuff, a lot of the money that is going out, our money that is going out, isn't even being tracked there, even though it's all supposed to be. And then what is there is pretty vague. You can see money going to a lot of questionable things. But, you know, what do you do with it? And the whole system is very burdensome, very difficult to navigate. It took me multiple phone calls with really well-versed, longtime kind of California fiscal watchdog types who also know the program, and they confessed that they were befuddled by a lot of it. So it's not even, it shows some of the problems. But it's so difficult to navigate that unless you really know what you're doing, it's not user-friendly, and I'm sure that's purposeful. All right, so moving on from finance, let's go to the Department of Healthcare Services. So this is another welfare-type agency. They administer all of Medicaid, decide who gets Medicaid benefits. Medicaid here is obviously called Medi-Cal, you probably know, and it is the free insurance for Californians under a certain income level, and also obviously is now paying for illegal immigrants' healthcare as well. So the auditor has flagged this agency for some time, noting problems. I'm sure you're all shocked that our Medicaid agency has been paying out benefits to people who shouldn't have them. So for years now, going back to 2018, the auditor has noted that, you know, at least $4 billion are going out in Medicaid benefits that could be fraudulent, that questionable, and that has not been fixed. Nothing has changed. Questionable payments are still going out, and as of April 2025, yes, there's like slightly fewer questionable members getting Medicaid benefits, but very slight. So still problems. And almost $2 billion have gone out to these people that probably should not have gone out. So billions, we're talking billions. Not only that, the agency has apparently suspended the processes it used to use to make sure that all the county welfare agencies were making sure that the wrong people weren't getting benefits. All right, we are getting close to our ad break, so I'm just going to, I mean, there's just so much. There's the technology department. But one thing that you might want to know is the Department of Water Resources. Also not a surprise, California has not been maintaining and storing water. And then also Newsom's Office of Emergency Services, which has failed so dramatically, with the as so many residents have lost lost everything to fire. So anyway, the auditor says that, quote, California's deteriorating water infrastructure and climate change may threaten the lives and prosperity of its residents and the reliability of the state's water supply. Don't know why they're blaming climate change. This is pretty much very clearly laid at the feet of our leaders, most notably Gavin Newsom recently. So Gavin Newsom has not done anything to shore up our water infrastructure. In fact, obviously, there's probably more dam destruction going up in Northern California, which will affect agriculture, which will kill agriculture up there. And the auditor notes that our water infrastructure continues to age and requires significant maintenance. And they said, we've been warning about this since 2013. That is 12 years ago. So, the report also notes that we have not really seen any expansion of our infrastructure since the 1970s. I quote from the report, historically, the state's dams have posed a significant risk to human life and property. In 2017, the near failure of the Oroville Dam spillway led to our focus on the risk posed by dam safety. The Department of Water Resources, Division of Safety of Dams, is responsible for overseeing the condition of the state's more than 1,200 jurisdictional dams for the purpose of determining their safety. And then this is pretty bad news, very bad news for the future. The auditor warns that water project delivery capabilities could shrink as much as 23% over the next 20 years. And the number of dams that are in very poor condition has increased by 73% just since 2023. All right, so we are going to take a quick break. I'll be back with Scott Johnson talking about Ilhan Omar, fun stuff. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Free Talk California.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
News. I'm Tom Rigotti. The FBI has arrested four members of an anti-capitalist group whom they say plan to set off bombs across Southern California on New Year's Eve. Fox's Jessica Rosenthal has more.
The FBI arrested Audrey Carroll in San Bernardino, where she and three others are accused of trying to build and test bombs they plan to set off outside American companies at midnight New Year's Eve. They are all members of the anti-capitalist group Turtle Island Liberation Front.
A manhunt has been renewed in Providence, Rhode Island, after police released a person of interest in the mass shooting at Brown University.
A big key point of evidence that they're looking at is this surveillance video of the scene, which is limited, is the engineering and physics building where the shooting happened on Saturday afternoon. That is where two Brown University students were shot and killed. Nine other students were wounded.
That's Fox's Brian Yenis in Providence. America is listening to Fox News.
Paso Golf, Paso Golf, Paso Robles Golf. Christmas is here, buy their dolphin gear at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Hey!
Give the gift of green this season. Purchase gift cards today for rounds, gear, and dining at Deeds Bar and Grill. There's no place like.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online. DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
Hello and welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi and joining us from Minneapolis is Scott Johnson. Welcome, Scott.
Thanks for having me, Susanna.
Thanks for coming on. So I teased your appearance on the show say we're going to take a little break and go to Minneapolis and deal with Minnesota's problems for a minute. We've got plenty of our own in California. But I just, the story has been so fascinating about Ilhan Omar. And I told your daughter, Eliana, a little while ago that I'll give you credit if she gets deported. So tell me how you started following her and got interested in this congresswoman's story.
Are we on the air now?
Yes.
Susanna, it's a long story. I've been on the case for what will be 10 years. It began in August 2016. I didn't know anything about her at the time, but she defeated a 22-term incumbent state representative in the Minnesota House of Representatives, who was a legendary feminist hero in the Twin Cities, from the University of Minnesota community, named Phyllis Kahn, a very smart woman. And the Star Tribune, our local newspaper, a real liberal rag, celebrated Omar's victory over Phyllis Kahn like a Dewey defeats Truman kind of a headline. Huh. And I thought, I had not paid attention to that. This was in a Democratic primary of a Democratic district. So she was going to be elected state rep, which is, you know, a lowly job. But the Star Tribune treated this as huge news, and I thought it was mostly attributable to the demographic shift of that district to reflect the Somali community that was very heavily populating it, and wrote briefly about it on Powerline. And shortly after that, I got an email message from a reader who directed me to a site. Like, so much social media about Omar has been removed from its online status. It's long gone.
Wow.
Called Somali Spot. And the Somali Spot post talked about how Omar advertised her husband and father of her children as, in fact, her husband, but that she was in reality married to another guy named Ahmed Nur Saeed Elmi, who was her brother. And I read the post a few times and wondered how I could check that out. I didn't know this, but I found that such a thing existed, but I found an official Minnesota marriage online database. And I put in the names that were mentioned in the Somali Spot post, and up popped up two marriages, one in 2002 to the guy whom she advertised as her husband and was in fact the father of her children, Ahmed Hirsi, in 2002, and then one in 2009 to this guy whom the Somali Spot post said was her brother, named Ahmed Nur Saeed Elmi. And in fact, it turned out that the 2002 entry reflected the application for a marriage license that they never completed. And she claims to have been, in her memoir and at the time, claimed to have been married to the guy culturally in an Islamic ceremony. And every subsequent twist and turn in the story is attributed to her Islamic, in quotes, faith tradition, except for one. And I didn't know this at the time, but in documents that were subsequently discovered, the 2009, her first legal marriage to this guy, Ahmed Nur Saeed Elmi, was performed by a Christian pastor.
Huh.
So everything else in her biography is attributable to her Islamic faith tradition. But that goes as a great unmentionable, and that's because the marriage was a joke. It was for some fraudulent purpose. I can't say definitively why. But that's where I got into the story, and I wrote...
Can I interrupt real quick with a question?
Sure, sure.
Who is the Christian pastor who married her to this... this Ellie.
Ahmed Nur Saeed Elmi.
Yes. Do we know anything about this pastor?
she's been requested. She's been requested to appear for interviews several times. People have knocked on her door, but all we know is the various affiliations that are reflected online, and I think I mentioned them in the Washington Free Beacon column that is prompting your call to me this afternoon. I tried to document pretty much everything I knew about her. There are so many details. But I put packed, I would say, the most entertaining ones into this Washington Free Beacon column. Yes, Ilhan Omar married her brother. That was published on Friday.
Yes, and I urge all our listeners to read it. It's a trip.
So, all of a sudden, this is in the news sort of again because President Trump has taken notice of the phenomenon of the massive public programs frauds committed by an almost exclusively Somali cast of perpetrators in Minnesota. That too has been going on for the past. I mean, this particular fraud, the Feeding Our Future fraud, has been going on the case has been going on publicly for the past 4 years, and I've been writing about that very frequently on Powerline, and I covered the two trials daily on Powerline. But Chris Rufo wrote a column for City Journal, which I've written for a lot, including the column. I'm going to just take a quick diversion. But in 2016, I thought this Ilhan Omar story was so interesting. I just wanted to document it. And I thought Ilhan Omar was going to be an international superstar, even though she was just running for this lowly legislative district.
So you knew it back then.
I wrote this column for City Journal called The Curious Case of Ilhan Omar just to document what you're asking me about, the steps that I went down and the responses that I got. I wanted to go into that, but I want to talk about whatever you're interested in, Suzanne. But this Feeding Our Future case has exploded since November because Chris Rufo wrote a City Journal column about the case, and he attracted attention with a terrorism connection, which is kind of incidental, and he attracted President Trump's attention, and President Trump has been talking about it and her and Tim Walz, our feckless governor, since then. And so I've been trying to make this the fraud a national story for the past 4 years. It's just an incredible exposure of corruption and crime.
I think a lot of Californians are envious of the national attention Minnesota's fraud is getting, because California has so much as well, but it remains so well protected because Gavin Newsom is on the up and up, so it's remaining very protected here. But I do think there's so many parallels between California and Minnesota just in terms of governmental collapse and corruption. Yeah. So it's a fascinating parallel. So you broke this story in 2016 on the website Powerline, which is independent, obviously. What was the response? Did anyone from Minnesota's establishment media pick up on it? Did you get criticized? What happened after you broke this story?
That's a great story. So I just wanted to mention that when I found what I found in this Minnesota official marriage database that matched what was reported in this Somali spot site, I looked at Omar's campaign site, and it advertised, her not the guy she was legally married to, but who was the father of her children, as her husband. And I called her campaign manager from the number on the site, and she said, I'll get back to you early in that morning. And she said, I'll get back to you this afternoon. I didn't hear from her that afternoon, but I did hear back from a criminal defense lawyer whom I was familiar with from covering the 2016, terrorism trial that was held in federal court here involving nine Minnesota Somalis who had tried to join ISIS from Minneapolis. And she represented one of the six who pleaded guilty in that case. So I knew who she was. She sent me back a non-responsive email saying I was a bigot, and if I had further questions, I should direct them to her. And I think she intended to scare me, but she didn't know. You know, I was a lawyer. I knew who she was. I was not scared, let me put it that way. And I did direct further questions to her, but she, of course, ignored me. And so the story did blow up. And within a week or two, the Star Tribune had a reporter, Patrick Coolican, who covered it. And it was reported on page one, and Patrick called me for a comment saying that the Omar campaign had issued a statement denying that the guy was her brother and asking me for a comment. And I asked Patrick when he called me for comment, well, who do they say he is? And he said, they won't tell me. Okay, so that's the way it went in 2016. And then there was a second tranche of information that came out about Omar between 2016 and 2019 by local reporter named Priya Samsunder, writing for a local conservative news site, Alpha News, by David Steinberg for PJ Media. I would say the three of us were those who pursued this story. David Steinberg came up with a lot. Priya Samsunder came up with a lot. Much of it's social media that reflected that her legal husband was her brother, with reference to Omar's kids, with, you know, I'll say her real husband, number one, as his nephews and nieces and so on. That stuff has all been wiped. But Priya, you know, we all took what was available on the internet, and I mentioned that in the City Journal column as well. But and then in 2019, there was a state campaign finance board investigation of infractions that Omar had committed in the course of her campaign in 2016 that resulted in an investigative file with a trove of incredibly interesting documents, including her 2014 and 2015 tax returns filed jointly with, I'll say, her cultural husband, whom she was not legally married to, but not with her real husband, the guy who was her brother.
Wow.
So, it's just like she's a one-person crime wave.
Yes.
In 2019, then, so I started.
So, what happened to that investigation? Obviously, she was able to go to Congress.
Right.
So it just went away.
She had already been elected in 2019, but I started writing the Star Tribune reporter, Patrick Coolican, about what was the documents that were in this file. And I would say he knew that she had a problem. And he went silent. But in either late June or early July 2019, the Star Tribune published a 3,000-word story on those documents that really is excellent. The two people who wrote it are kind of scrupulous left-wing reporters for left-wing newspaper. But the only items in it that suggest that her legal husband was not her brother are Omar's denial and her campaign spokesman, Jeremy Slevin. He got the same treatment in 2019. He doled out the same treatment to the Star Tribune reporters that I had gotten from the criminal defense attorney in 2016, calling the Star Tribune bigots who were trying to humiliate this great Somali woman. So that story is really worth looking up. It's the headline. It was the most read Star Tribune story in 2019, and the headline begins, "New Documents, Revisit Ilhan Omar Case." And it's still available online. It's still worth reading. You know, it's written from their perspective. But I think a fair-minded person who reads it would conclude that this guy was her brother. Mm-hmm. I would say more or less, I felt like I could prove it beyond a reasonable doubt with the facts in that case. And the only thing on the other side is Omar's denial. And accusations of bigotry.
So it raises the question how an elected official can get away with it, but her district is just so heavily Somali that it doesn't matter. These things have no repercussions because her district will keep voting for her because it's a tribal loyalty.
I think it's both Somali and heavily Democratic. Before before it was Somali, it was heavily Democratic, and now it's even more so. It's one of the most heavily Democratic districts in the country. But it's still a good question. How can she get away with it? And so much has happened that I can't go into with your audience, but I kind of come to the conclusion that she's untouchable for whatever reason. I can't say why, but nothing, everything rolls off her. I don't know why. I would think it raises a problem of ethics for the ethics committee in the House of Representatives. I don't know if they've looked into it, but she has survived, and it's old news at this point. And every fact checker that has looked into it has found the story not proved. So I would invite your audience to look into it on their own.
We're going to take a quick break for some messages from our sponsors, but we'll be right back. Are you able to hang on for a few more questions after this? All right. We'll be back, everyone. Don't go anywhere. We're speaking with Scott Johnson in Minnesota about Ilhan Omar's many scandals. Don't go anywhere.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with the major averages kicking off the new trading week lower, with tech stocks again weighing on the tech-heavy NASDAQ as investors continue to worry about an AI bubble. Investors are also cautious ahead of key economic data this week. The November jobs report will be released tomorrow, and also October's retail sales figures. These reports were delayed due to the government shutdown. Also later in the week, November's consumer price index report. Tech was the worst performing sector, while healthcare gained. However, shares of NVIDIA rose nearly 1% on reports that the AI chip darling may ramp up chip production. The Dow winners, Amgen, Goldman Sachs, and Honeywell. The Dow decliners, Salesforce, Apple, and Caterpillar. The Dow down 41 points. The NASDAQ lower by 138. S&P 500 down 11. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me.
If a Lenovo computer for your business is on your holiday list, don't shop around. Just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com. It's your last chance to get exclusive deals on the PCs you want for your business, like the ThinkPad X9 14 Aura Edition and Yoga 7i 2-in-1. So avoid all that shopping chaos and price comparing, and just go directly to the source, Lenovo.com, where PCs are up to 35% off. That's Lenovo.com.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, "Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and our guest today is Scott Johnson from Minnesota, speaking on Ilhan Omar. So, Scott, lots to ask you in our last 10 minutes. But so you mentioned that she's basically untouchable in Minnesota. Do you see her as untouchable in D.C. as well? We can go into her more recent marriage to a very powerful Democratic consultant in D.C. Who is not Somali. But yeah, what's your take on her vulnerability on the national level?
On the national level, I have to think about that for a second. Well, I think she is vulnerable on the national level. President Trump has access, I would say, to immigration and other missing documents. This story exploded in Minnesota in 2016, but it was stopped by the United States Attorney Andrew Lugar when a local investigative reporter who was pretty well respected named Tom Lydon for the local Fox affiliate reported that she was under investigation by federal authorities. And this same attorney who had written me, castigating me as a racist when I asked about Omar's marriages, approached Andrew Lugar and asked whether, in fact, Omar was under investigation. And Lugar sent, I think, a one-sentence letter saying that she was not under investigation. And that story was wiped from the internet. You can still find traces of it in other stories, but the story was wiped. And it had the effect of killing the controversy here. I mean, I kept at it, but for the mainstream media, it was over at that point. Now, on the national, there are documents. I was told in 2019, a guy at ICE called me, and I ended up meeting him for lunch, a local ICE official. He called me from out of the blue and said, "Do you want to get together?" And we sat down for lunch, and the first thing he told me was, you know, Tom Lydon had that story right. And to me, that was a bombshell. But so I think there are documents maybe in the world of ICE, and then in these campaign investigative file documents that came out in 2019, there is a reference to a FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request, that Omar's campaign people were trying to figure out how the hell do we deal with this story. And you can see that they flew in a campaign consultant named Ben Goldfarb, and he's saying, you know, I'm looking at this, I'm looking at what she's got to say, I'm looking at these documents, but it's really hard to say. She's married to one guy culturally, and she's married to another guy legally. Even he couldn't say it, you know, in a way that made sense or would be an appropriate crisis management kind of a way to deal with the story. So in those documents, there's a reference to them, these campaign people, filing a Freedom of Information Act request for the documents that her family filed when they brought in the brother from England. They brought in Ahmed Nur Saeed Elmi from England. Her family was split when they left Kenya. Three siblings went to England, to London, including this younger brother. And the father and two sisters, Ilhan and her older sister, came to Minneapolis, I think as fraudulent members of another family. And the brother was living, you know, a teenage homosexual life in London. Not that there's anything wrong with that, except I think, you know, in Islamic social mores. And they brought him over here to extract him from that. This is what my Somali sources who called me that year told me. And so they brought him over here. And in connection with that, they filed documents with the United States Immigration Service, USCIS, is something like that is the acronym. I can't remember what it stands for. But those documents that they filed to bring him over from England would be very illuminating. And the administration, I think, would have access to them. I think President Trump, people in his administration could do something seriously about it. But all the crimes that were committed in connection with this, I think, are barred by the statute of limitations. So the worst that could happen to her is if some of these documents leaked and her story all of a sudden became untenable.
And then
she'll have the fallback position. This is my prediction, just having watched her for the past 10 years. But her fallback position is going to be, look, I was trying to help my beloved father and my beloved brother. I did the best I could. And, you know, she'll have another version of a story that perpetuates herself as yet another
victim.
You know, form of victim. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So her first husband, the one she was culturally married to, yes. is father of her children.
Yes.
He's kind of faded in the background. In 2020, I believe, she married a... This was a scandal in D.C. because I remember when this happened. This was my last year in D.C. I was covering Congress. I never covered her because I was a specialty healthcare reporter. I will say she was the first member of Congress I saw with a staffer who was male wearing high heels and lipstick. And I thought,
wow,
huh, all right, that's who she is. Anyway, she married this very prominent, or I don't know how prominent he was, but he was a Democratic consultant, his wife, and that scandal only came out because she was named in his wife's divorce documents, filing for divorce from him. His name was Tim Minette. And
correct.
She had, and then it became a scandal because it was apparent that she was basically keeping his consultancy afloat using her campaign dollars. She was paying, I think at one point paid well over $1 million
right.
in one campaign cycle to his firm. And he has kind of subsequently been followed by financial scandals since. He was accused a little while ago of defrauding investors in a winery that he bought, and other things. But this did connect her into a different world, the consulting kind of DC political world. What's happened to that first husband?
She cleaned things up after the story broke in 2016, and the first thing she did was divorce her brother, and then she legally married the father of her children, and then she legally divorced the father of her children. And at that point in 2019, I was meeting with Somali sources who told me about her affair with Tim Minette, the guy who was raising money for her, who was not black and not Islamic and not Somali. And I just kept saying, I don't know how to use that. I don't know how to use that. But 3 weeks later, it blew up in the Daily Mail that they had been trailing her. And they published a story about her relationship with Tim Minette, including pictures of them carrying a six-pack of beer into, you know, their apartment that they were sharing. So, I mean, that was kind of a big deal. I think that there was even a subsequent Daily Mail story, I'm trying to remember, about, you know, her lavish digs in downtown Minneapolis. But that's all. It's been a story, but that part of it really has gone so silent here. And, you know, it's like bypassed the local media and been covered by the Daily Mail. And if you want the real story, you had to follow a power line in the Daily Mail.
Wow. Well, in our last few minutes, I guess, you know, what's the moral of the story, or what, you know, with the politician who is obviously this corrupt and getting away with it, what's kind of your hope for the outcome?
Well, my hope would be that someone in the Trump administration in a position to do something takes it seriously, gets the facts straight, and asks around to take a look at the documents and what, you know, would maybe leak them to a friendly journalist and see what happens. I don't know how much of that would be legal, but my hope would be President Trump is interested. Whenever he talks about the case, he garbles the facts. They're not very hard to get straight, but he doesn't have them quite straight. The big picture is right. I keep referring to, I say he's got the big picture right. Ilhan Omar is Somali fraud exhibit A, and the issue of Somali fraud has blown up into this huge national story. So my hope is now is the time that something happens that follows up on this aspect of the Ilhan Omar story.
Yeah. Well, thanks for all your work on it. What a fascinating journey through Minnesota corruption. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks to all of you for joining. Thanks to Scott for calling in from Minnesota. And we will see you next week on Free Talk California. Talk to you later.
Free Talk California is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton. It's